This is Mae Brussel from KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. This is broadcast number 582, January 31st, 1983. On to some more on the contract of the Boeing and Northrop and Secretary of Navy John Lehman. Lehman knew that the plane was defective. The F-18 was designed to fill two roles, he said. Then, after the Pentagon criticized him and he admitted it was defective, he then tried to exaggerate the value of the airplane. John Lehman said Tuesday the F-18 warplane was designed deliberately with compromises in some capabilities so it would serve both as a fighter and a bomber, and that's why it will be immensely valuable. It can swing from one mission to another. We consciously made a decision to compromise fighter capability and get better attack bomber. When it was under criticism, then he goes out to say, well, we purposely did it this way because that's the way we'll get another, a better plane. And when he was caught with this still having clients, money coming in from London and not selling the company, but just putting it in somebody else's name, a member of the House of Lords in London, he did what all great heroes do. Navy Secretary blames his wife for the flap over the holding company, and he said that the Abington Corporation that consulted Northrop and Boeing, the aerospace contractors, he had dropped his interest in them, but his wife had made a mistake in the wording that it was a holding company and it wasn't still advising them, as I say, even though it's going from London. Well, he tried to deny the conflict of interest that came up in the various newspapers towards the end of December, but he wasn't too good at it. And many stories about his denial of relationship to Northrop and Boeing. The thing is, he represented them earlier and had this corporation that is a dummy front, nothing else but, then gets in the Navy and a Secretary of the Navy, and then contracts go to them. Shows the influence that Jeff Girth has another story, December 24th in the New York Times. Navy Secretary keeps his ties to the company aiding the arms makers, and the question of eventual gain and how he'll get his money and how the lawyers of the Ethics Committee are investigating it, and he didn't sever those ties and said he did, and it turns out that he still has them retained. And so a long series of articles, many of you may have seen them, on his defense of this particular relationship, trying to say it's a retaining company and not a consulting company, playing with the name, but still in trouble. Then some more articles followed. Navy Secretary Lehman in hot water. This is the San Francisco Examiner, New York Times. He didn't sever his connections with the companies that do business with the Pentagon. Another story, U.S. reopening the Navy chief's ties to his firm. So an investigation will be going into that, and they say he's in hot trouble. The San Francisco Examiner followed with another story on investigations in Washington, D.C. How did he get into the Pentagon Secretary of Navy representing companies that he didn't tell them about at the confirmation hearing? Now, you and I know that John Lehman was known to all those people. He worked for Henry Kissinger. That's how he got to be Secretary of the Navy, and his ties to Washington have been there a long time. He's not a newcomer, and as I say, as a first cousin of Princess Grace, with those Philadelphia connections of that family and other brothers in the defense, working 10 years with Senator Jackson, and the Boeing contracts are going to come through that Jackson's pushed for all these years. He didn't just fly into that place. He happened to be there for a long, long time. Many of you might remember the broadcast I did a while ago based upon several articles. One in the Washington Post, it was by Maxine Cheshire, and another one that followed it. Maxine was reporting about John Lehman, and I had this on the air, but I'll repeat it for those of you who don't remember it. She heard about some parties in Washington, D.C., the famous sans pantalon, P-A-N-T-A-L-O-N-S, that means without pants. There was a party in Washington, D.C. that involved the top group from Henry Kissinger's national security staff and Henry Kissinger and Maxine Cheshire. In her book, Maxine Cheshire, Reporter, page 294, 295, says that with the person who gave the party, she was trying to find out who it was a member of Henry Kissinger's staff, John Lehman, a cousin of Princess Grace of Monaco. Lehman didn't consider his party shocking. He was happy to fill me in. When he stopped at Cambridge, England, he belonged to the ancient order of Gonville Longers, L-O-N-G-E-R-S, and they gave parties where the men wore black ties without their pants. The women came in their evening dresses, but the men had nothing on from the waist down. I wrote that one of the most important guests at the party was Admiral Rembrandt Robinson, Kissinger's liaison with the Chief of Naval Operations, and Admiral Thomas Moore, resplendent with his topside gold braid, artistically attired below in flower-bedecked skivvies trimmed in ruffles. Now, this group belonged to President Park Chung-hee's Blue House residence. This is where they kept electronic bugging equipment and double agents and wiretap various people and sexually compromise them, similar to the purple rooms that Bobby Baker ran for Lyndon Johnson, and Adolf Hitler had his famous whorehouses to control politicians. This came out of that society or that group in Washington, D.C. And Admiral Robinson was soon to become Chief of Navy Operations himself when the superiors of Pentagon would learn that Robinson was at one of these Sands Paloon parties. So Lehman gave these parties in Washington, D.C. for Henry Kissinger and his gang. And Admiral Robinson never made it to Chief of Operation. The story goes on that in May 82, while on flight over the Tonkin Gulf in South Vietnam, a helicopter carrying Admiral Robinson was shot down and he was killed. But Lehman gave these parties, and these pantless parties, and then he rose to become Deputy Director of Arms Control and Disarmament. Lehman was part of this group, and then he gets promoted. And in the Korean story, there's stories of blackmail and secrets and sexual parties that she writes around about. And she said, ironically, John Lehman had unintentionally related another front page story during the siege they were under by the Navy in 1970, but I didn't pick it up. In quote, she said, "I appreciate what you're doing for me," he said, "but don't call me at home. I'm pretty sure my phone is tapped." By the other side, Maxine asked, "No," he said, "by our guys. Henry Kissinger has his own staff wiretapped." So the Sands Paloon parties and the, you can imagine what went on. And later, I updated this with a program on the radio. I'll have to look up the number of that broadcast, that John Lehman, Secretary of the Navy, was the darling or the sweetheart of Senator John Tower from Texas. And of course, John Tower is married to Samuel Cummings' sister. She got an appointment by the Reagan administration and the Arts Council. Her brother Cummings in London again, the arms merchant of the world, the largest deliverer of arms merchants to the world, with international ties to the Guggenheim Bank and the terrorist organization that's made to look like the left, with his offices in Monte Carlo. So John Tower and John Lehman and Samuel Cummings and the Monte Carlo connections are very close. And the Henry Kissinger and the Senator John Warner, the Edwin Wilson, all of these names keep reappearing, the cast of characters. But the Lehman story is so interesting because John Lehman worked for Henry Kissinger. He worked for Boeing and Northrop. He gave the contracts to them, and they... And he also has the brother going around putting down the bishops who want the arm freeze, the nuclear arm freeze. Now, the Secretary of Navy's, the secretaries are really interesting. I gave some names, I think, a few weeks ago, I believe I did, of James Forrestal and John Connolly with his close links to the Vatican and Licio Gelli and Paul Marcinkus going way back a long time, the Vatican connections of John Connolly. Fred Korth was Secretary of the Navy. Fred Korth was the attorney for Mr. Ekdahl. That was Marguerite Oswald's husband, Lee Harvey Oswald's stepfather. Fred Korth, who was Secretary of the Navy, was the attorney for Mrs. Oswald's husband. John Connolly received letters from Lee Harvey Oswald, and so did John Tower. Lee Harvey Oswald worked in Navy intelligence under Mr. Paisley and John and Mr. Pipes, Richard Pipes, and the National Security Council in the Soviet Union as a spy. And Fred Korth was the attorney for Marguerite Oswald's husband. Then we have John Warner, the brother-in-law of Richard Mellon Scaife, and the next-door neighbor, Edwin Wilson, the head of Task Force 157, with their links to Bobby Inman of Navy Intelligence. He's Admiral Bobby Inman, who was National Security Advisor, and so on. And then John Lehman, the cousin of Princess Grace, the employee of Henry Kissinger, the brother who works for Senator Jackson from Seattle. I think you get a picture. You don't know all these names, some of you do. But you certainly can get a picture of overlapping names and relationships, and the Joseph Lehman who works against the American Catholic bishops who want the nuclear arm freeze. Close ties to the Vatican, all the Lehman family, working close ties with the Pentagon decision-making, with John Warner, with Henry Kissinger's staff, with the Washington inside-out politics, the sexual politics, the blackmailing, and so forth. It's quite a lovely picture, and as I say, he goes from the staff of Henry Kissinger to a dummy front office of eight people to represent two huge corporations, Boeing and Northrop, then goes to the Pentagon and makes the decision to buy their material, and then says in his confirmation hearings doesn't mention the clients at all. Now, there's another story that came out, the controversial TFX. Now, I'm going back in history to the Kennedy assassination, to the parallels when Fred Korth was Secretary of the Navy. The TFX was a multi-million dollar warplane contract. I have whole books on the TFX, or you can look it up in any books on the Pentagon. I just pulled one out of my library out of about 40 books and subjects on articles on this subject. Book called The Pentagon by Clark Mollenhoff, Mollenhoff, written in 1967, long before Watergate, the controversial TFX. Now, this is an airplane that exceeded a $6.5 billion contract, the largest contract for military planes in the nation's history. What we're talking with the F-18 is $40 billion. That's what I meant by inflation. Early in 1962, the rival for the TFX was the Boeing Company with headquarters in Seattle, Washington. That was Senator Henry Jackson. So in 1962, Boeing didn't get the contract, but in 1982, if you're patient, the Boeings got $40 million. So with inflation, the Northrop and Boeing did okay. Their headquarters in Seattle, and they proposed to build their plane in Wichita, Kansas. But the General Dynamics Corporation Convair Division in Fort Worth, Texas, got the contracts. And Henry Jackson at that time lost out for his area. But as I say, 20 years later, he gets the contracts. Incidentally, the chief of Convair of General Dynamics in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, the chief of security for the entire system was Max Clark, whose wife, Gallie Clark, provided Marina Oswald for clothes and food when Lee changed jobs from Fort Worth to Dallas, and she was a daughter of the Serbatovs, a famous white Russian family who allegedly had helped the Tsar's family escape. This white Russian, Mrs. Serbatov, described like the cabin and lodges by her husband, provided the Oswald family with their needs while they made transitions to other government jobs from one to the other government position. The contracts went to the General Dynamics, even though it was an inferior plane. The bidding was low. The plane, the Boeing airplane was a better plane. The price was less. It was $100 million lower in the first phase, and it would have saved the government $415 million on the contract. $415 million would have been saved. Where, you know, how our Social Security and our funds are short in Washington. But they gave the contract November 21st, 1962, through the coaxing of Mr. McNamara from the Ford Foundation and Fred Korth, who then was Secretary of the Navy. Now, Fred Korth was the head of a bank down in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that was to receive the money for the contracts from General Dynamics. General Dynamics was not politically well off at the time. It was going under, but they received the money thanks to Fred Korth, Secretary of the Navy and the attorney for Marguerite Oswald's husband. From 1958 to 1961, there was a Deputy Defense Secretary named Gilpatric, G-I-L-P-A-T-R-I-C, and he was the lawyer for General Dynamics Corporation until 1961, and then the contract went in 1962 to General Dynamics, and he represented the firm. This is similar to John Lehman representing Northrop and Boeing, then going to the Defense Department. He goes to the Defense Department representing General Dynamics until 1961, and then becomes Deputy Director of Defense when they give contract to a plane that was notorious. They kept going down during the war. They were F-111s are part of the Vietnam history, how defective they were. I had a friend who used to call me every time a plane went down. We would laugh, ha-ha, because we knew they were defective. We knew they were pushed through, and this airplane was in the news throughout the entire Vietnam War. So the taxpayer was paying for a defective airplane at a higher price. And this book describes in 1958, even as a major defense contractor headed by former Army Secretary Frank Pace, General Dynamics was in serious financial trouble in 1958. A Army Secretary was head of General Dynamics in 1958, following a disastrous loss by Convair estimated at $400 million. The way they salvaged the General Dynamics was combine it with a Chicago builder by the name of Colonel Henry Crown. Crown owned the Empire State Building and half of Chicago, and the attorney for Colonel Henry Crown in Chicago was Albert Jenner, who then went on to the Warren Commission to cover up the role of chief of Convair, as I say, was Max Clark, who was supplying Lee and Marina with their needs in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And then Gilpatrick, this Deputy Secretary of Defense, Gilpatrick, in January, moved from General Dynamics in 1961 into the Defense Department. He was in the law office of Kravath, Swain, and Moore, and he made a financial arrangement to leave General Dynamics and go to the Defense Department, which is the parallel to the Lehman family and their dummy fronts working for defense, industry, who are making these particular weapon systems, then going into the Defense Department to make the decision to buy the instruments that are defective, and then going back into the private sector to reap up the profits of the huge corporations. It happened in 1962-63 in Dallas, and it's happening in 1982 in Washington, D.C., in 1983. Now, there's one account in just the book, The Pentagon, by Mollenhoff, says General Dynamics, deeply in debt, had a vital interest in the multi-billion-dollar TFX warplane contract. With that contract, General Dynamics could recover from the shattering financial loss by Convair Airplane Division. If General Dynamics failed to win the TFX contract, the huge plant faced the possibility of more serious problems. So Gilpatrick took part in the Defense Department negotiations of contracting with the General Dynamics Convair in the Dallas-Fort Worth area with instructions to buy the TFX, which is identical to John Lehman going to the Pentagon again and coaxing the F-18, which costs more and is defective. Now, here's an interesting conflict. President Kennedy and Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy in 1962 expressed no concern over the role that Gilpatrick played in the contract. Why? Because Kennedy had a lot of electoral votes from Texas, and he was depending on them again in the next election. So they didn't object to this conflict of interest that was going on in the South. Now, Fred Korth, a Fort Worth lawyer and bank president, the lawyer again, as I said, for Marguerite Oswald's husband, he was president of the bank, became Secretary of the Navy in January 1962, the same time that Mr. Gilpatrick, the attorney for General Dynamics, is in the Defense Department. He succeeded in the Navy John Connally, another Fort Worth lawyer who resigned and got the Democratic gubernatorial nomination, and he was governor in Texas when John Kennedy was murdered. Now, Fred Korth is Secretary of the Navy. He's replaced Crook Connally with his close ties later in the 70s with Paul Marcinkus in the Vatican and the Opus Dei and so forth. He's replaced that Secretary of the Navy with Fred Korth, who is appointed now to come to Washington. And as Navy Secretary, he has very close friends from General Dynamics and customers of his bank. He had the Continental National Bank of Fort Worth. And Fred Korth, as Secretary of the Navy, had approved a loan of $400,000 from the Continental Bank to General Dynamics, and the company was going broke and needed these contracts. And he was getting letters back and forth and had loaned them another $600,000. So as the money went to General Dynamics and Convair, it was invested into the bank, Fred Korth's Continental National Bank of Fort Worth, and again, they were all back in business. And according to this book on the Pentagon, high officials of General Dynamics in Fort Worth were shuttling in and out of Fred Korth's office at the Pentagon in 1962 when the decision for the TFX was coming up, and Fred Korth had to make a decision as Secretary of Navy to give the contract to those people whose bank he was loaning money to in the Fort Worth area. This large amount of loans, and they had a significant amount of loans out, and his bank was handling them. The one account of this said letters between Korth and the officials of the Continental Bank showed that Korth, while he was Secretary of the Navy, received glowing reports of praise from the banks. He kept loaning them money and loaning them money until finally Convair and General Dynamics TFX gets the contracts, and Fred Korth then has the money deposited in his bank as the banker that they will use. Now, at a press conference in October 31st, 1963, this was just a month before John Kennedy was murdered, about 4 weeks before John Kennedy was murdered, November 22nd, President Kennedy was asked about the legality and the propriety of Fred Korth, the Secretary of the Navy, with the TFX matter. It began to be a thorn in John Kennedy's administration and an embarrassment, and the president reiterated that Korth only had a small interest in the bank and that the bank loan to General Dynamics was so small as bank loans go, and Kennedy passed it up. Then Mr. Gilpatrick resigns after the hearings November 19th and 20th, 2 days before Kennedy is murdered, and then can go back to TFX and General Dynamics. Fred Korth was Secretary of the Navy while his bank in Fort Worth was giving loans to a company that was going broke, and by having that money, it poured back to his bank, and then they were sailing away with business. Oh, keep in mind, of course, that all this money comes from U.S. taxpayers. What we're talking about is shuffling the war and making it safe for people to pay more money. You know, when a plane goes down, we pay a pension to the widow, the flyer. The cost of the planes is millions of dollars. The loss of lives, the military funerals. I mean, these planes were constantly going down, were defective, and weren't good planes. But again, Senator Jackson from Seattle, Washington, was hanging in there. And for 10 years after this episode, he had one of the Lehman brothers working for him. Then the Lehman brothers were representing Northrop and Boeing. And then this year, they get a contract for $40 billion, which is a lot of money going to these companies for these kinds of people. Now, in the volumes of the Warren Commission hearings, Volume 1, Marguerite Oswald is testifying, and she's telling about her husband that she's divorcing, Mr. Ekdahl, and how Fred Korth and the husband brought in people to perjure themselves to help her get a divorce. This is Lee Harvey Oswald's stepfather, and the Secretary of the Navy, who was an attorney for Ekdahl, has perjured and brought up people to lie at a trial implicating thievery going back in the early years when she knew him, before the controversial TFX stories were out in the news. She's testifying in 1964, early in 64, when the Warren Commission first started. She was the third witness called. And she said, I want to tell you something else that upsets me. It has to do with Mr. Edwin Ekdahl, who was an electrical engineer. He made a lot of money in those days, $10,000. And he had a woman before he married her, and she didn't know about it. And later she found him. She said, my two boys were in military school. And these are John and Robert, the brothers of Lee Harvey Oswald. And then she discovered that this Ekdahl was still seeing this other woman that he had before. So she was going to file a divorce, but before she could do it, Ekdahl filed it against her, and she said, I was the one who was, taken advantage of. He has this other woman, so she didn't divorce him. And Mr. Fred Korth represented Mr. Ekdahl. This is page 251 of the Warren Commission hearings. And she said, after 2 days after the assassination of Lee's death, while I'm at Six Flags, it comes over the radio that Mr. Fred Korth knew the family, and that this happened a while back, that Fred Korth knew my family, that he represented my husband in the divorce proceedings. And she refers to him and, as I say, the shenanigans in the court and the relationship, but this was Lee Harvey Oswald's stepfather. It was her third husband. One husband passed away. Lee's father died when she was just several months pregnant. She said he was a good man, and the happiest part of her life was when she was married to Mr. Oswald, but he passed away, and her third husband was Mr. Ekdahl. But she was complaining. She said, in the middle of June 1962, the subject was brought up about his efforts to discharge, an honorable discharge, for her son. And I was advised by the Secretary of the Navy, John Connolly, from his office, that he no longer would be Secretary of the Navy, and the correspondence was turned over to the new Secretary of the Navy, Mr. Korth, and Mr. Fred Korth, who was to handle Lee's papers, had been the attorney for Lee's stepfather a few years earlier. Now, getting back to the story, which isn't separate from this, the Vatican story, and I'll continue with that and do more next week, the Vatican story of trying to blame the Soviet Union for the assassination attempt on the Pope. The names that come out in this expose, always the same gang, Henry Kissinger, and as I say, Richard Pipes from the State Department, and the Langley, Virginia, and the propagandists. Out of that come the same team working, Edwin Wilson in Rome, Frank Turpel saying he knows Aja, the same team that reappears in the article about the Lehman family, the Lehman brothers. One working for Henry Kissinger, one working for Eugene Rostow, the other working for John Warner, Lehman working for Senator John Tower, close to him personally, emotionally, and so forth. The relationship to Edwin Wilson again with John Warner. In these major news stories coming out now, they are finally interconnecting. I don't know whether the writers of these stories are aware, but I think they must be, like Jeff Gerth, I know, is, and Alexander Coburn. And they're pulling out names that interrelate. You can jump from one major story to the other. The use of John Lehman's brother to put down the anti-nuclear bishops. Well, I mentioned last week that there was a promotion of Mr. Bernardine from archbishop to cardinal, so they weren't exactly getting their way, but they were trying. The use of propaganda to stop the rapprochement between the Soviet Union or to reduce the weapons. The escalation of the atomic weapon budget is so tremendous, and the problem is that the people like Lehman and Vernon Walters, who put down these bishops, are not identified enough, because the major media is certainly in the hands of those people that push these appointments and approve these appointments and refuse to print on top headlines the conflict of interest of these particular people and their interrelationship with each other. And finally, to conclude this broadcast, I want to repeat a copy of an article from the Associated Press, UPI. This is Thursday, January the 6th. The Soviets see a CIA role in linking of Bulgarian to attack on the Pope. Now, last week, they accused them of wanting to investigate Lumumba, Allende, and Letelier. Now they're saying that it has to do with the arms race also, that as soon as the Catholic priests and the bishops began to respond to the anti-nuclear feeling around the world and would not go for the Reagan slogan that there are things more important than peace, then Aja in Rome began talking to Italian authorities and members of the Central Intelligence Agency, and the purpose was to blame the Bulgarians and KGB to turn the Catholic sympathy away from Soviet disarmament proposals. And they said, in Pravda, only a blind person cannot see the hand of the crusaders from Langley and the CIA, and that's exactly what Alice Coburn said in the Village Voice. It goes back to Langley and the CIA. That's exactly what Alex Coburn said in the Village Voice, that this whole story goes back to Langley and CIA. And the Russian newspapers were saying that they want to put down the anti-war statements and have the Vatican Academy of Sciences be discredited on their opinion of the nuclear weapons. So by having Aja in the fall of this year begin talking to the CIA and using American hand to put down the Catholic bishops, and Pravda said that there's been a baiting of Catholic clergy who participated in the struggle for peace and disarmament across the United States and the other NATO countries. I think the peace movement will continue. I don't believe that anybody is going to seriously believe as the weeks and months or years go on this Bulgarian connection, and I'll get back to more of that next week. But the point is that Pravda was linking this propaganda to the nuclear stance of American bishops and priests. And who is campaigning against the bishops and priests? One of the three from the Lehman family, all working for the Defense Department, all pushing deployment of nuclear weapons, having a dummy front organization that gets contracts and sits in Washington or in London. I'm sure this fellow from the House of Lords in London is part of the deployment of the new American bases outside of London for the next war. I'll go into some of those if you haven't seen the maps and charts of setting up the nuclear weapons in London. In the meantime, our time is up. Another hour has gone by. We'll continue on these nasty subjects again next week. This is Mae Brussel on KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California.